Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Blog Talk Radio and the Voice of Change. I'm Sharon Ann Wyckoff and delighted to be with you again today. Today we have Karen Melton with us. Karen Melton is a prenatal birth and bonding therapist working with babies, kids, adults, and parents, healing and preventing early trauma from the conception through post-birth phase. She has a practice in the North Bay area and also offers her work internationally through telephone sessions and working in England. She has recently begun to offer intensives in California. You can reach her at her website, healyourearlyimprints.com. And in connection with the program today, Karen has launched a new Facebook page called Listening to Babies. So that can be, it can be a worldwide ongoing conversation about this important subject. And today's conversation is about listening to babies. The Voice of Change brings to internet radio individuals speaking out on pertinent aspects of life during these transformational times. During these programs, I interview spiritual leaders, enlightened teachers, educational professionals, visionaries, birth therapists, cultural creatives, and artists. Guests share their perspective, their expertise, and their insights to support, encourage, and inspire new ways for these changing times. I believe that these times are asking us to live in greater harmony with ourselves, our loved ones, as well as all on the planet. No longer can we live unconsciously. The time for conscious creating has come. And although there is much chaos taking place on the planet and in the lives of many, the potential for greater understanding, healing, and change has never been greater. This is the time to be open to new ideas, new possibilities, and new ways of handling old problems. In many individuals, as well as numerous groups, are working diligently to bring about this change on the planet, healing the earth, the water, the skies, as well as all forms of life. The journey into the new world begins with just one new idea and one small step. So I invite us to all begin anew in each and every moment. Today our conversation is about, should we listen to babies and what can we learn from them? And it is with Karen Melton. Karen Melton is a remarkable woman, having 15 years of experience with individuals and groups before in England, and she moved to California. And here she has been studying with leaders in the field, and it's just my delight to have her with us today. I'm going to get back to my site here and put her on air, and we will be with Karen. Welcome, Karen.
Hi, Sharon.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
It's always such a delight to have you on the program.
I know. I'm back again.
Yes, you are. I was just looking. You know, we've done so many shows. If our listeners want to, they can check the website for other shows. We've done how to avoid a cesarean section and the traumatic effects of one.
Yeah.
And also preparing for your baby before conception. So we've done a lot of programming together, and today is an exciting topic. You know, should we listen to babies and what can we learn from them?
Absolutely.
So, yes, it's a wonderful, wonderful topic.
Yeah.
So let's see. Anything you want to say before we begin, or should we just jump in?
I think we should just jump in.
Just jump in, okay, because there is so much to do. So, you know, some people, Karen, really feel that unborn babies and young infants don't feel anything and are unaware. And, you know, that why do we need to listen to them? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, because I would like to speak to that. You know, my field of work is prenatal and perinatal psychology and health.
Yes.
And I think the core principle of pre and perinatal psychology is that both unborn and born babies are conscious and they are sentient beings, and that means that we have the ability to have sensations and experiences, and that we have a sense of I am. And I found in both my personal and professional experience that we actually begin as a spiritual, conscious, sentient being before we come into the physical world at conception. And that's when our spirit consciousness begins to meld with our physical body in the first cellular divisions at conception. And then so begins the process of embodiment and incarnation. You never really hear embodiment and incarnation talked about when somebody's thinking about having a baby, do you?
No, you really don't, not at all.
But that is exactly what is beginning to happen at conception. It's a very, very significant, important moment. So this coming together of, you know, how this happens, how this coming together of spirit and matter happens is a big subject in itself, and we won't be going into that today in any great detail. So basically at the beginning then, we are always aware from that spirit conscious part of us. And as our body grows, we begin to develop a body-oriented awareness and consciousness as well, some of which is cellular consciousness, and we do actually have cellular memory too. And that's a whole interesting subject right there just by itself as well.
Yes, I was going to say, because, you know, I think maybe that's where the misconception is that babies and infants don't feel, or, you know, even prior to birth, because they think of it in a different way. So maybe we can get into even that sometime.
Yes, absolutely. So as sentient conscious beings, we're very much affected by our environment in the womb, which is mainly our mom. She affects our development and health on the physical, emotional, and spiritual levels. And we're not really just enfolded in her uterus. Her body and soul and spirit are part of our womb space. And so is ours, part of her experience of pregnancy.
You know, that in itself is huge. That we can actually feel the presence and the energy of our mother. And it makes sense, but I don't think we really take that to heart when we're carrying an infant, perhaps.
No, it's interesting because we seem to function on such a biological, medical level around all this. That we understand that what we eat and healthy diet and exercising and all of that sort of thing during pregnancy is important. But then, of course, emotional health isn't really discussed, psychological health. And, you know, those are really huge. Spiritual health, those are all huge, massively huge areas of us.
Yeah.
And they're not separate from what we eat and whether we exercise or not.
Right.
And our health. It's interesting how this has evolved to this place where we don't include those other pieces.
It really is, and it's like we just don't go there. There's a body of information that is well known, and we just operate from there. But when we really step back and look at it and think, of course, an infant in utero is going to feel what you're feeling to some degree. Yes, it's mind-boggling.
And also the little one in the room is having her own experience too.
Yes.
It's not all about what's going on with her mom.
Of course.
And so also mom's primary relationships with her partner, husband, and other siblings, etc., are also part of our environment when we're in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, unborn babies often have strong connections with their siblings before birth.
I can imagine,
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. And the siblings will often know that, and they'll have a very strong connection with each other during the pregnancy. And there was a very interesting study done by an Italian doctor, Dr. Alessandra Piantelli. She did a very interesting study using ultrasound, which I'm not too keen on, but she did the study using ultrasound of twins in the womb. And it showed us how much interaction and relationship there is going on in the womb between twins. It showed many behaviors and relationship dynamics going on there, and all of these continued after birth. She did a whole study that carried on for 3 years after they were born. She went back at various stages and studied the whole piece there for about 4 years, I think it was, and that was very interesting to see. That wasn't a surprise to me, but to a lot of people that would be a surprise.
That would be, right. And I think you've shared this with me before, and I thought it was fascinating because they actually played a little bit outside the womb once they were young children as they did inside.
That's
something
right.
about the veil being put up. I forget exactly
There was one story about the twins who were in separate amniotic sacs, and they used to play this game between between the amniotic sac lining, where they would touch each other through it and play games through it. And then when they were actually children, you know, outside of the womb, they would play the same game using a net curtain. Up at the window.
I get chills, Karen, when you speak about that. It's just amazing.
Yeah, well, there were lots of examples of that kind of thing.
Yes. So that is just, you know, such an indication that, you know, those children feel inside, you know, the prenatal feels and experiences and has her own experience, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
Can you just touch on the ultrasound? I know it's a huge subject, but I've heard that it's not the best for a baby, that it's very loud. Do you know any particulars about that?
If I don't. Offhand, I'm not really great at plucking research out of
But it has been something that people should just really think twice about and kind of look into instead of just doing it on a regular basis, right?
Well, you know, like many things in pregnancy and birthing, things like ultrasounds have just become routine. And I think that we really need to examine what we're doing with these technologies that are completely unnecessary most of the time and actually think about what they might be doing to our baby as well. What
exactly.
might be the experience of the baby inside having those ultrasound waves bounced off them.
Yes. You know, it would be so remarkable if everyone considered the fact that the prenate in the uterus is really a feeling and experiencing being.
Yeah.
They would look at things so differently. So I think your idea of examining the procedures or whatever is, you know, wanting to be done on a regular basis is just so important when a mother is expecting a child.
Yeah, we're always having our own experience in the womb.
Yes.
And we're far from unaware, and we do possess a kind of transcendent consciousness that is also connected to our body, but it can operate outside of our body too.
Mm-hmm.
Much the same as in near-death experiences when people routinely leave their body, for example, say in an operating theater during surgery.
Yes.
And then when they come back from supposedly death, they make detailed reports about everything they saw and heard in the room.
Mm-hmm.
They were completely gone. And they found it. There's lots of, you know, books and studies about this, but one interesting piece that I read, which I liked, was that even physically blind people can see what's happening during a near-death experience.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, so a physically blind person can see the people in the room and the room when they're having a near-death experience, which is when we come out of our body. And that's an example of that consciousness that is connected to us.
But can
also transcend the body in that way.
Oh, that is just really remarkable.
Yeah. And so I wonder, you know, is it the beginning, perhaps the same when we leave the body at the end of our life? Perhaps our consciousness has been enriched by its experience of being here in a body during our lifetime, but it still has the same aware and transcendent quality, and it doesn't need a physical body to see and hear and to perceive and to be affected. And it's the same for babies when they come in during their
Amazing.
Time in the womb. Yeah.
Amazing. Why do you think it's not widely known that we are conscious as babies, Karen?
Well, I think the prevailing cultural view of babies for quite some time has been biological, medical, scientific oriented, really, especially for unborn children in the womb. And, you know, it has improved slightly. There was a time when doctors would operate on babies without giving them anesthesia because they had Yeah, they had managed to convince themselves that they didn't feel any pain because they hadn't developed their brain to a certain level. And this
well, in a way, they still do that with the circumcision.
Yes, I think they do. Yes, unfortunately,
you know?
that is still going on.
That is still going on, and
yeah.
It's just amazing. These children, I've seen actually a film of it, and they go into shock, and they don't think they're feeling anything. It's just beyond me.
Well, they don't hear screaming and cries and pain as real because they have in their own mind, and this is the power of this kind of thinking, convince themselves that it can't be
yes.
because they're in pain.
Yes.
So
yes.
we are doing
exactly.
some pretty awful things to babies in this, you know, particular way of thinking about them because
absolutely.
It is a way of thinking about them that leaves out our essential spiritual conscious sentience. And
yes.
really, that's our essential humanness.
Yes, it is. It is.
That is our humanness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we've evolved to this culture that only believes what it can prove in a double-blind study or what it can see under a microscope a lot of the time.
Right.
And that's certainly true of the medical profession. So this gives us an extremely narrow perspective in thinking about human beings.
It
it's
does.
Not a holistic perspective.
No, not at all.
No. And also, you know, mainstream psychology, I don't know why, but they haven't caught up with or integrated any of the pre- and perinatal information that's available. The Association for Pre- and Perinatal Psychology and Health is a wonderful organization. They have conferences and a journal, you know, there's lots of research available. There's so many amazing things and so much amazing information there. And somehow, it's like, you know, if you're a new field, and by new, I mean, well, we've probably been around, you know, in a big way for at least 40 years.
Yes.
It takes so long for the mainstream to catch up.
Yes.
You know, even mainstream child development theory doesn't include anything about what happens to us in the womb and during birth.
Right. Exactly.
It's amazing,
just like
really.
It's two, it is.
Yeah.
It's like it's two different separate bodies of information.
Yeah, it's just, it takes so long, you know, for people
mm-hmm.
to pick up these things. So, yeah. And, you know, I think another reason that this is unknown is that I think many women are quite disempowered around trusting their own bodies and in our culture and trusting their deep intuition about pregnancy and childbirth. And I think that's something that needs to be healed too.
Oh, I think
and,
it's so true.
Yeah. And I feel like, I do feel the medical profession are largely responsible for this disempowerment because they
yes.
they use a model in which the doctor is the authority, not the mom.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and I think that's very undermining and disempowering
mm-hmm.
of women as moms. And, you know, in a way in our culture, we're also raised to hand over our body and our health needs to the doctor. Most people don't even want to take responsibility for it themselves anymore.
That's very true.
And in a way, the obstetrician doesn't want the mum in charge of her birth. He wants to be in charge or she wants to be in charge and wants you to follow their rules. And those rules often go against your own strong needs or your wants or your inner knowing. And that's very disempowering.
Absolutely. You know, I've listened to the other programs that we've done and just reflected back on that. And it's like two different, totally different ways of giving birth. You know, you talk about the woman being empowered and to her choices to be listened to and supported.
Yeah.
And the other model is that the doctor's in charge and the mother almost has to conform to that. And so it is, it's two different models. And
yeah.
It would just be wonderful if, you know, they could follow the lead of the mother.
Yes.
What is needed. Mm-hmm.
That's right. But medical people are very attached to their biological view of life and to being
yes.
in charge. I think if we really want to bring consciousness to pregnancy and birthing, we probably have to remove it from the medical profession ultimately. Because it would just take so long for them to get that, you know, that
mm-hmm.
babies are conscious and that the whole thing has to change. And in a way,
yes.
midwives are already halfway there. They're practicing mum
they
baby
are.
Birthing. Even if they don't include the baby's consciousness in that yet, at least they're practicing supporting mum and baby and empowering
yes.
women, which I think is wonderful.
Oh, yes. And the book that you introduced me to, Thomas Verney, I believe it is, The Secrets of the Unborn Child.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, I would love to have that book out there, 7 million copies made of it.
Yeah.
And spread around.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's always a struggle to bring unconscious aspects of our culture to consciousness. It takes time.
Yes.
And in a way, it may be easier for most people to think of their baby as unaware inside of them, because then they don't have to really pay any attention to him or her until after birth. I think it requires far more of us as early parents to ponder things like the soul and the spirit of our incarnating unborn child or newborn child.
Oh, yes.
And to think about what their needs and experience may be. You know,
of course.
When we include our spiritual, conscious, sentient nature, there's a lot more responsibilities to be taken by us as parents from the real beginning of life, which is not birth, it's actually conception or even before that.
So true. So true.
Yeah. And it's not really possible to study our human spiritual consciousness using double-blind studies and looking under microscopes. And yet, because it's so much the core of us, it's somehow... it needs to be brought in some way that validates other ways of knowing, I think.
Yes, for sure.
I mean, you can study a human heart biologically and scientifically, but that'll tell you nothing about the humanness of this heart. It won't tell you if it was an open heart or a loving heart or wounded heart, or if this was a kind person or if it was a broken heart. These questions are central to the experience of what it is to be human. And so it's true to say, I think, that we don't begin to have a consciousness after we're born. We are spirit consciousness and sentience from even before conception. And this is our core and primary aspect as human beings.
Of course.
And then when we come in as this consciousness at conception, we join with our parents on the physical, spiritual, and the ancestral levels, coming into the ancestral lines of both our parents. So there's really a lot going on at conception.
Oh, there's so much, such a rich time.
Yeah.
And it would be just so wonderful if people truly understood that and understood that that little one within them is conscious from the earliest time.
Yes.
So how can we listen to babies at the conception stage and in the womb? How can that be possible?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Mm.
You know what, listening to babies has taught me about this stage of parenting, the preconception and conception stages, is that the more conscious we are about becoming parents at the beginning, the better it is for baby. Planning is important. Preparing before conception is the ideal, because then you're really preparing to welcome the consciousness in your baby spirit before you're even pregnant. Connecting with your baby, so connecting with your baby before or from conception, or as soon as you know that he or she has arrived inside of you, is really good for baby, and it's really great for family bonding too. In my work, one of the most common things reported by prenates, that's unborn babies, is feeling isolated in the womb. It's almost a permanent feature of the traumas that I work with, that the isolation always seems to be there. So welcoming the little one in the womb and letting her know that you hold her in your heart and mind as a conscious being who's having her own experience, and that you're open to hearing from her, is a really good place to begin.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, you know, and mums are often so open and highly intuitive when they're pregnant. So I think when the baby spirit comes in, it's as if a portal is opened to the spirit world, if you want to call it that, that kind of beams through and into the mum's body, and the mum is immersed in that beautiful energy as the new consciousness comes in at conception. And I think this is partly why pregnancy can be a very powerful, sacred and intuitive time for mums.
Yes.
And I'm sure that this opening up and this heightened sensitivity and connection to that streaming portal to spirit is actually no accident, because as early parents, we really need to be able to listen and tune into this new being that's come to be amongst us. And we're going to have to use our intuition to do that and trust ourselves in that place.
Yes, yes, for sure.
So babies at this stage, you know, from conception onwards, or actually before, can communicate with mums through dreams, through visions and telepathic messages, whilst you're daydreaming, through creative pursuits like painting and writing, when you're not thinking about it, you're just doing something and it's just coming through from that place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And through movements, you know, if you're communicating with your baby in the womb, that when they get a little bigger, obviously, they can communicate by responding to you with movements like kicking and pushing and response. And unborn babies can also communicate feelings to mum through mum's body and feeling states. So as I said earlier, as mum is affecting baby, baby is also affecting mum.
So beautiful, so beautiful. And just, oh, I just wish everyone expecting a little one had these ideas.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, I'm sure there are growing numbers of moms really being in touch with their infants before they're born, and yet too there's just such a great opportunity for more understanding in this area.
Yeah, and you know, many women have had communication with their babies before.
Yes.
And Elizabeth Hallett's books, Halletts, mm-hmm. have well documented a lot of that. One's called Soul Trek and one's called Stories of the Unborn Soul.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ah, I hadn't heard about that.
So, you know, I mean, but really in order to receive these communications from her baby, a mum needs to be able to connect with her intuition and trust it.
Yes.
And to really take the time to connect with baby every day and tune into her or him and not do anything, turn off everything, turn off electrical devices and the TV and cell phones and all of that, and just concentrate on being and having some gentle, loving connection. And this communicates to your baby, we know you're there, we know that you're having your own experience, and we know that you're affected by how we feel and by your environment, and we're listening to you. We're including you, and we're protecting you. And in doing this...
That's beautiful.
Yeah. In doing this, you're welcoming consciousness and inviting communication.
Oh, that's so important, Karen. So really just to have every day have a time where you mm-hmm. turn everything off and you just focus. And I think that, you know, I've talked to some moms and they really don't know where to begin, but I think this is a big place to begin is just to put that time aside where you are there, you know, perhaps your hands are on your belly mm-hmm. and you're just, you know, touching in a way that you can and listening.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, beautiful way to begin.
And, you know, they've done studies on what music that unborn babies like, and they seem to prefer classical music, especially Baroque.
Oh, yes.
That's interesting, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
You like Baroque music, you can also play some Baroque music while you're hanging out.
Yeah. It would be interesting to play music and perhaps a couple different pieces and see what your baby's reaction is during that, you know.
They will.
Keeping everything soft.
Yeah. And I would say that even if you're not receiving tangible communications from your unborn child, you just trust that she's receiving you and that you're having a positive effect bonding with her so early, and because she's receiving that she's loved and not isolated, and that she's valued and that she's included. And I've noticed that babies who receive this are so much more secure, and because the bonding has already happened way before birth.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Oh, that's so beautiful, so beautiful. You know, as you mentioned, we've had conversations about, you know, having experienced both of us our prenatal state, and one of the things that you mentioned today, which I hadn't thought about, as precisely as you mentioned it, and that's isolation. But I recall when I recalled my experiences several times of being in utero, isolation was definitely one of the things that I felt so strongly.
Yes. It's very common.
And then, as I've shared with you before, and I'll just share briefly, I actually felt or sensed, and probably at a cellular level, that there was smoking involved in my home before birth. And I actually had challenges. I didn't really want to come into the world because I didn't want to be around that. And as I was reading in Thomas Verney's book, The Secrets of the Unborn Child, I learned that many times when a mother is smoking, it actually cuts down on the oxygen that it comes through to the prenate. So that's probably one way that I was sensing it. To me, it was the smoke, but it could have been just basically the fact that I was having less oxygen and in a state of perhaps anxiety when that was taking place.
Yeah, well, also, there are about, I think, 350 nasty chemicals in cigarettes. So those are all coming into your mom's body, too.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yeah. If babies are so affected and aware in the womb, how can we support them during difficult life changes? Because we all have them, you know, things go on in life.
Yes, that's so true. Yeah, that's true. You know, a lot of what I've learned about what affects and traumatizes babies has come from listening to the baby inside of me, and also in many clients of all ages, babies, children, and adults. If something traumatic or stressful has happened to you when you're pregnant, I'd suggest that you assume with confidence that it has affected your baby and that you do some repair as soon as you can. And what does that mean? It means check in, tune in, and empathize with your baby and talk about what happened. Talk to them about what it is about, if it's about them, what it is about them. If it's not about them, tell them that it's not about them.
You know, that's such an important thing right there. So if it's something that's going on between mother and another person or mother and father, you just assure the baby that it's not involving them.
That's
a huge piece, I think.
Yes, it's not about them and there's nothing they have to do about it. And I thank Ray Castanino for teaching me that particular piece because it is very important. And the other thing is, if it feels like something that is life-threatening or something that could have been perceived by your child as life-threatening has happened, it's really important to let your baby know that they're safe now. Because a little one so often will go into some kind of fight, flight, or freeze place inside in response to either something that's happened or something that they've perceived to be happening. And they don't realize when it's over a lot of the time. So they end up staying in that place. And then they actually get born in that place, and they live their lives in that place. And I see so many people who are living within those kinds of what I would call prenatal survival imprint. And it's not a good place to live from.
No, and so a mother could just reassure the baby after the situation was over.
Yes, and say, you know, that happened, and it was, you know, whatever it was frightening, scary, and all of those things, and it's over now, and you're safe.
What a beautiful idea.
So, it's not like, it's not like we have to try and be perfect as parents when we think about all of these things, and if we think about consciousness, some people might think, oh, heavens, that's another thing I have to think about what I'm doing with my baby all the whole time. But this isn't about being perfect. It's just about treating this little one as a family member from conception and including them in a way that even it may be in a way that you would if she were on the outside too, except you have to understand that as prenates, we're very vulnerable, and we're developing. We're in a very important stages of development there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So.
So much to this.
Yes, and I've learned that, you know, from babies that having parents that practice these differentiation skills, and that's what I was talking about when you say to your baby, you know, this is about me, it's not about you, and I'm dealing with it. That's a differentiation you're making. This is my stuff, it's not yours. And because it really is extraordinary how much babies take on in the womb. We take on so much in the womb. We form mistaken beliefs about life, about our parents. For example, if an unborn child knows that his mum's struggling with herself and with life, and maybe she has low resources and no support, this little one might think, my mother can't cope, so I have to take care of her.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so an unborn child might even also respond to this challenged mum by perceiving her low resources as a life threat. Because if mum can't thrive, then neither can baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then
at the cellular level, that would be something that the prenate would know.
They would, yes, the prenate knows
yes.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that prenatal decision can get translated into, if I take care of her, I'll survive.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So then this later on becomes an unhealthy lifetime pattern of compulsively helping other people. And the helping is coming from a deep unconscious and powerful fear of life threat. In that, so, for example, that would look like this. If I don't take care of everyone, I will die. That's the core belief. And it's,
yes.
you know, running underneath everything. And really, if you think about that, it's like the prenate is actually running your life from that place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a survival. That's a survival imprint. And I work with these all the time with babies and kids and adults.
That's just so beautiful. So, if anyone is experiencing anything here that you're mentioning, they can contact you through your website, right, Karen?
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah.
HealYourEarlyImprints.com.
Yes.
Beautiful, beautiful. And you can work with them over the telephone if they're not in the Northern California area, correct?
Yes, of course, I can.
Beautiful.
I just wanted to say that if there are people listening who like to work with energy and they're pregnant, that you can actually put some protective or loving energy around your baby, around your pregnant belly during difficult times too, if that,
wonderful.
If that works for you.
Mm-hmm.
Another good thing to do. So putting that energy there and checking in with baby and saying, you know, I'm having a fight with dad right now and this is nothing to do with you and I'm dealing with it and there's nothing you have to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or I'm going to do my therapy now. I'm going to work on my stuff here and there's nothing you have to do about it. This is about me.
Mm. Such a easy thought, and yet one that most probably would not think about. So I'm so glad that you're mentioning that.
Yeah, it is really an important one. It makes a big difference to the little ones. That's what they've been telling me. Yeah. Yeah.
So beautiful.
Yeah. So maybe we could talk a little bit about how, you know, if we can accept that babies are primarily conscious and sentient beings, how does this affect the way we're listening to our birthing and newborn babies?
Of course, because if we really realize from conception that they are conscious and sentient, we're going to be talking to them in a different way. So I think that's a very important topic.
And we're going to be thinking about birthing in a different way and perhaps how what's happening to babies once they come out as well.
Yes.
So, and we have to consider birth really in a whole new way if we take on the consciousness and sentience of babies. Because we have to realize to begin with that it actually involves two people.
Mm-hmm.
And that birth is actually a relationship between two people, the mom and the baby. They're in that dance together. Mum's giving birth, and baby is also working hard to get born.
Yes.
And they're each having their own experience, and this is not necessarily going to be the same.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So, you know, we all have a how to get born blueprint inside of each of us.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're working to get born, we want to be successful, and we want to do it under our own steam without unnecessary interruptions.
Yes.
And babies can feel defeated and frustrated and angry about birthing drugs that slow them down or speed them up or make them dopey because these drugs take away their ability to get born under their own steam.
Right.
I can remember feeling furious during my birth when I was revisiting that memory of that place one time, feeling absolutely furious when I was moving along really well and then some anesthesia came in and it just took the wind right out of my sails. And I was I was so angry about that because I was doing so good. And you know how it feels when you're doing something really well and you can feel that sense of, I'm really doing this and I'm doing it well and I'm getting there, you know. And then that and it just, you know, takes the whole thing away from you.
You know, that's so amazing, Karen, because you're bringing up so many points. You were actually helping in the birth and you were feeling it was going well.
Yeah, in my own birth.
In your own birth, right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then the anesthesia just put it in a whole different place.
Yeah, kind of knocking out of the game, really.
Yes, yes, right.
I was furious about it.
Yes, and it takes it just changes your part in the whole experience.
It takes it away from you in a way.
Yes, it does.
And
right.
It also gives you an interruption imprint. And so, you know, a good birth gives us an imprint for life in our whole being and body that says, I can do it. I can start, I can move through, and I can finish under my own steam and do it well.
Yes.
So interruptions and trauma imprints can play havoc with our ability to be effective. For example, an induced child, and heavens, there are so many children being induced now, completely unnecessarily, no medical reason for it.
Yes.
Just, I think, doctor convenience. But an induced child, for example, might have problems initiating because they haven't had the experience of initiating their own birth. Somebody else has come in from the outside and done it to them. And that's an important part of birth, that we reach a place of readiness and then we initiate the birth and then the contractions begin, and that's the place it unfolds from. So we have that taken away from us when we're induced.
What an interesting
interesting
idea.
I know. And then if, say, a child was interrupted in the middle of their birth sequence, that child, as they grow, might find it hard to get past that stage when they're doing products. So they might be able to start and get moving, and they get to the middle part, and then they get stuck, or they can't do it for some reason. So they can't follow through. And then a child, say, who's been traumatized by drugs at the ending part of the birth sequence, may be able to, you know, go through projects all the way till that end, and then maybe they suddenly feel a loss of momentum. Maybe they feel a kind of fuzzy-headed feeling, which is the drug imprint memory, or maybe they feel a kind of a revved feeling in their body, in their nervous system, which depends on which drug they gave you, because they all have their own characteristics, like Pitocin is very revved and fast, for example. So this would make it hard to complete anything. So I think that accepting our early consciousness and sentience in relation to birth means that we really have to think very responsibly and seriously about what we're doing to our babies every step of the way.
Yes.
Everything we do and everything we don't do is having an impact.
Yes, yes. What led me into this field, into this desiring to know more about it, was I heard the statement, however it was that you're born, that's how you live your life. So that's what you're talking about, that these different interventions can really affect your entire life.
Yes, they do.
Just amazing, amazing concept there.
They do affect our lives in enormous ways, actually.
Yes.
And I think it's fair to say that babies generally don't like medical birthing and medical interventions because they're not respectful of babies' vulnerability, sensitivity, and consciousness, and they do a lot more harm than good most of the time.
Yeah.
I think medical professionals generally don't understand that little ones need respect and support and sensitivity and empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And in hospitals, birthing women are so often disempowered, and therefore so are babies.
Yes.
You know, and so truly the whole process should be mum and baby-centered, but it most certainly is not like that in hospitals. But even so, you know, if you choose a medical birth, you can still hold the consciousness of your child during the process, and you can advocate for her and talk to her about what's going on and what's going to be done to her by the doctor, etc., before it happens.
Yes.
So she has, and that really helps. So, because you know that if you choose a medical birth, that your doctor will want to use drugs and surgery, because those are the tools available to doctors. And particularly
mm-hmm.
in the USA, birth is attended by highly trained surgeons,
right.
And this is why our C-section rate is through the roof.
Yes.
You know, because surgeons do surgery.
Right.
This is what they have. So when you go into a hospital, you are signing up for a medicalized birth, and that's what you're going to get. But you can acquaint yourself with all of these possible interventions and interruptions that may be offered to you throughout your whole experience, and navigate through them in communication with your baby and in full awareness that they're having an effect. And I think in that way you can actually reduce the effects of them somewhat.
Oh, I think so too. And I know when I was going to have surgery once just for my arm, I had a friend go with me, because I knew that I was going to be in a vulnerable state and I wanted certain things to be sure to be done. And so, you know, to have an advocate there, and I know today many women have doulas. And so, you know, that can be a wonderful help, because you know that you discuss everything with that person beforehand so that, you know, they can support you during times when you're not in a position to really, you know, have that conversation.
Absolutely, yeah. It would be wonderful if part of doula training and midwife training included pre- and perinatal psychology and consciousness of the little one. It would be so wonderful. Then they could teach that to their clients, and the babies
mm-hmm.
get benefits of that. It would be great.
Yes. Is there some training with the doulas in peri and prenatal psychology?
Not specifically a training.
Really?
No. Huh. It should be included in their training, though, shouldn't it?
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful.
Anyway, there's another piece about birthing I'd like to share, which is that by the time we're actually ready to get born, we have already had 9 months of life experience, during which time we've formed perceptions and beliefs about life and the world, and we bring all of these experiences and perceptions to our birth.
Yes.
So, for example, if we've decided in the womb that for some reason, because something difficult's happened, that we have to be very quiet and still because the world is not safe, and this is a very common prenatal survival mechanism, by the way, birth then will be a very frightening time, because birth is all about movement and being seen. So that's going to be severely challenging to that survival mechanism. So, and this is an example I wanted to share, because it explains why a mom can say, I had a great normal birth, and her baby can say, I had a nightmare of a birth.
Oh, interesting.
It's two people, same birth, different experiences completely.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, and also if there are problems going on in your birth, it's good to ask the question and to wonder, and perhaps to include it with all the other questions you might be asking about why, what is this little one expressing right now and not coming
mm-hmm.
out? Or in lying transverse, or breech position, or in trying to arrive premature, to include the little one in that. Because sometimes what's going on is to do with the little one. It's not always, but it might be part of what's happening in the birth.
Sure.
So, again, that's a really important place to include your baby in those times and check in and say, what's up? You know, what's going on? What could be causing you to turn around and go in the opposite direction? What could be other than medical or other, you know, biological issues, to include
mm-hmm.
that piece too.
And you could even include that before birth, you know, if there was a little prenate that was in a
mm-hmm.
feet first position.
Yes, you could, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, so thinking about birth again, if you know that your baby is conscious and feels pain and is a vulnerable sentient being, are you going to want to see him arrive groggy from various drugs to be taken away from you by a stranger in a mask and put on a cold metal table and the bright
light?
Or are you going to want to be gentle and welcoming and have him met only by loving, empathic parents whose voices and smells are familiar, and have him placed on your body skin to skin with dimmed lighting and an understanding of the epic journey that he's just been on? Not only in being born, but for the 9 months before that.
Right.
And newborns, you know, if you're listening and empathizing with a newborn, they'll tell you their birth story. They'll do it in the way that they move, their cries, the way they look at you, postures that they go into. They'll actually show you the whole sequence in their body if you're actually listening and empathizing with them.
Oh, how beautiful.
Yeah, and you can actually see when you look at babies, you can see how comfortable or uncomfortable they're looking in their body. I'm sure everybody's seen, you know, really miserable and happy looking babies who are really struggling to get embodied because they had such a hard time on the way in. And nobody really knows how to listen, they're just trying to deal with that by themselves. Those babies really need some help with those kinds of issues.
So beautiful. Listening is just, it takes in so much, and it's just so beautiful.
Yes. And, you know, babies actually communicate a lot through crying, and so it's really good to get to know all the different kinds of cries that your baby has. And they also show a lot of deep feelings in their eyes when they know that they're being listened to. So look there in your baby's eyes with gentle curiosity and see. You can say to your baby then, "You're looking so sad. I wonder what you're so sad about." Or sometimes when parents bring a baby to me and they're talking about what they've gone through during the pregnancy or the birth, the baby will have suddenly a strong reaction at a certain point in the story. And then I know, and then we can explore that place and say, "Oh, there's something about that place for this little one." And perhaps say something to the baby, you know, like that may have been a difficult time for you or scary, depending on what feelings they're sharing with you. And in that way, you can help them to process through those places and get some help. You can't actually hurt your baby with empathy and gentleness.
Oh, of course not.
And listening. And babies' cries just have different feeling qualities in them. So you can reflect that back to them, you know, "Oh, you're so angry about that," or "I'm so sorry that happened to you, and I so wanted to hold you in my arms when that was happening in the hospital." In that way, you can do some repair with your little one about what went on that you weren't able to influence at that time.
So beautiful.
And I mean, one thing about crying, I think it's true to say that we live in a culture that actually really wants to shut babies up when they cry.
Oh, of course they do.
I mean, it just seems like that's what we somehow been trained to do this. As soon as a baby starts crying, we're jiggling them and move them, stopping them, and doing everything we can to stop them. And then we can also feel that if the baby won't stop crying, that this is a bad reflection on our parenting or something, and we can lose confidence in ourselves as a parent. But I think we have to really challenge this concept about babies' tears, because we all need to process our feelings and we all need to have time to integrate and digest big experiences. And we're no different as babies. We really need to do that.
So
we need to be held and listened to and empathized with. And as long as you know that your baby's needs have been met, that she's not in any pain or sick or unwell, and that she is perhaps crying because she's processing something or just having some feelings or communicating something with you, just hold her and listen to the cry and just be with her. And if you have a sense of some emotion or reason for the crying, you can try saying that to baby, but keep it really simple, like, "Oh, you are upset about that. It's okay to cry. I want to hear how you feel," you know, those kinds of things. And sometimes when you listen to your baby's cry, you might notice yourself actually feeling really sad or really angry. And this is another way that babies communicate with us. They can do it by almost like putting the feeling inside of you. It can feel like that. So you can, if your baby starts crying and you have a feeling of sadness all of a sudden that wasn't there before, you can say to yourself, I wonder if this is what my baby's feeling. I'm just going to check with her about that and say, are you feeling sad, little one? What's going on, you know?
Yes.
And have some inquiry about that. But there's actually a good book by Alisa Salter called The Crying Baby that I recommend for people who are finding their crying baby challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to say that a baby that is crying for hours every day is a traumatized baby. That's not the kind of crying I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
If your baby's crying for hours every day, that's a baby that needs professional help because there's something, you know, if it's not medical or, you know, biological and you've checked all of that out, that's a baby that's needing some help with its emotional, psychological, you know.
Sure,
yes. Trauma, it's, I think William Emerson would call that trauma crying.
Yes,
Babies need some help with that. That's a baby that needs some help.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, Karen, I see we have 5 minutes left here, and I know we're going to have a little longer, so I'll let you, I'll ask you another question, then I'll let you continue, and I'll go and prolong the show if I can.
Oh, we are.
Here on the thing, okay?
Okay.
So, because this is just so, so wonderful.
Mm.
So, you know, the next question I had was, how can people really connect with their inner baby, the little one inside of them, too, and why might that be important, particularly in early parenting?
Okay, thank you. That's a good question. Well, of course, if we accept that babies are conscious, we have to accept then that we have a little one inside of us who's been through this epic experience of coming into life. This little one inside holds all the memories of that time. And so when we consider parenthood, or we enter into parenthood, this is a time when the little one inside of us will be especially remembering what it was like for her to come in. So in the part of becoming a parent where we're thinking about getting pregnant and preparing for it, our little one inside of us will be remembering that time and anything that happened to you during that time. I've seen this many times with pregnant mums. They'll get triggered into something like some kind of fear or emotional state or stress will suddenly come up at a particular stage, say, for example, at 3 months pregnant, and we'll sit with that and discover that it's actually not about anything that's happening right now. It's about something that happened to this mom when she was in the womb at 3 months. And her little one is actually remembering it.
Amazing.
When she's 3 months pregnant. And, you know, I've just seen this so many times. I have to say that I think it's normal. I just think that this is normal. And in a way, it makes sense that it would be that place in us that remembers our own journey would come up at those times when we're bringing another little one in. And in a way, it's also, an interesting way of looking at that could be that this is an opportunity for us to heal those places as we step into parenting ourselves so that we can be making really good choices and not acting in our parenthood out of a wounded place. If that makes
sense. Yes, for sure, sure.
Yeah.
You know, I'm afraid I'm not able to get back to the site to change the time on this. Usually I can prolong it for 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
90 minutes, and my website will not go back over there, so I'm afraid we're going to be ending. Do you want to we can talk about how we want to do it, because we are going to have to, it's going to be cutting us off very shortly.
Well, I wanted to just say that particular subject of how our own imprinting comes up during the parenting process, that I'm going to be speaking in a pre-conference workshop on that subject at the California Association of Midwives Conference on May the 20th in Julian, California, which is
near. Oh, wonderful. And if anyone is interested in that, they can contact you because we have like 45 seconds left here.
Yes. And also I'm going to be presenting at the Association for Pre- and Perinatal Psychology and Health Conference in November, which is in San Francisco. So please come and join us there.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes, for sure. And you can also reach Karen Melton at healyourearlyimprints.com.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Karen. And we'll continue this conversation another time.
Thank you, Sharon.
All right. Thank you for a wonderful show.
Thank you, Sharon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye now. Thank you for listening to the Joys of Voice of Change.